Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, everybody, this is John Leon from White Wizard, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey guys, we have a great episode for you. Today, it is John Leon from White Wizard. They are back with a very strong record, which John is going to tell us all about. So good to have White Wizard music back in our lives once again. And again, the new record's strong, guys. Check this out. Check this interview out and check some of the music we're going to play from White Wizard out and support them by purchasing the CD or going to iTunes and downloading the music. At the very least, go listen to it on Spotify. Show up to their live shows. Do what you can to support an independent band like White Wizard, especially when they're so damn good as White Wizard. Also on this show, this dude is massive. When we talk about some of the biggest rock managers of our time, Doug Goldstein is one of them. He managed Guns N' Roses when they were at the height of their career, and he is here to fill us in on what he's up to nowadays and, of course, reflect back on some of that time with Guns N' Roses. Doug Goldstein, a friend of mine. I've gotten to know him through Mitch LaFon, and a great guy, and I'm glad he is here to check in with us. And big apology to both John and Doug, because these interviews were recorded ages ago, and I'm just getting them up now. So I apologize to both you guys, but better late than never, right? So here we are. You know, what's happened is, unfortunately, I've been out of work, which I'm a freelance contractor guy, so I bounce from TV job to TV job. However, I've never had such a dry spell, and there's a lot of my fellow TV writers and producers and editors who are in the same boat. I don't know. We keep hearing how great the economy is doing on TV, but I'm not exactly sure what's going on in my line of work, because I'm not alone with this. A few things look like they're coming down the horizon, but man, it's been a rough 2 months here. And one thing that I can say is you guys have stepped it up. You've been amazing. Thank you for all your support with the PayPal donations. Please don't stop. Keep it coming. You're using the Amazon links. That is amazing. And we've stepped up our Patreon page. And this is the place I really want to direct you guys to support this show. Patreon.com/talkingmetal. You go, you make a pledge. I'm giving bonus episodes. You know, we only got like, you know, 7-8 people on Patreon subscribing and donating every month. And guess what? They're getting bonus content that no one else is hearing. It's usually just a straight shot, me rambling. I'll let things slip a little more on there than I would on this podcast, which is a more public place. The stuff on Patreon is very, it's just me talking to my friends. So I don't worry too so much about offending anybody or anything like that. So love to have you join us there. You know, you can pledge $2 a month, $20 a month, $50 a month, whatever you can afford. You know, I know, listen, we pay money for things we like, right? And podcasts are technically free, but we give you great content here and you get, in my opinion, mediocre content on places, platforms like Sirius Radio. I mean, geez, podcasts kill what's going on that. And yet we're willing to pay $15 a month for Sirius, we still expect our podcast to be free. And I get that. I get that. But on the flip side, if you can afford it and you do believe in what we're doing here and you think it's worth some money, go join us on patreon.com/talkingmetal and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And you know what? Maybe I'll read a couple of those iTunes reviews in just a bit, okay? And share this on social media, guys. Share Talking Metal. And tag me on it at Talking Metal or at Striegel. Visit my website, talkingmetal.com or talkingrock.net. Same site, two different addresses get you there. What's cool is the talkingmetal.com address still takes you to the, Talking Metal podcast exclusively, where the talkingrock.net is a whole thing going on there. We got my video shows, the Mark and Mitch show, which is the show I do with Mitch LaFon. We got all my different podcasts, including this one, Talking Metal, but also Metal Raps and Talking Rock podcast. So check that out, talkingrock.net. All right, without further ado, let's get into some White Wizard music. This is going back. This is called Pretty May, and it's off the new Infernal Overdrive record by White Wizard. This will be followed by my interview with John from White Wizard.
Hey guys, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal. We have John Leon of White Wizard. White Wizard is back. Possibly my favorite release by this band that I've loved now for like 10 years. The new record, Infernal Overdrive. John, how are you?
Great, man. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
So the last time I spoke with you, which may have not even been on the podcast, it may have just been on the phone or in an email or something, it sounded like you were going to take a break from the music business, which in theory you did. I know you had that one song that came out, Marathons of Dreams, back in 2014, but there hasn't been a full-length record from White Wizard since 2013. What have you been up to these past, you know, four or five years? Have you been pursuing other interests or just taking a break? What has John been up to these past few years?
Yeah, you know, I think I just kind of took some time away from the heavy metal universe. I still played a lot of guitar and wrote, but I kind of just spent a lot of time with my girlfriend at the time and traveled a bit and just, you know, wasn't sure if I wanted to keep doing it or not. I just started getting songs that started coming to me that were inevitably White Wizard songs, and they were just really great. And that's kind of how it is with songwriting. Stuff just kind of comes to you, whether when you're jamming or in your head. Sometimes I'll have riffs just come into my head or wake up with riffs in my head. It's a bizarre process, but once an idea comes, it's hard for me to go away from that idea until it comes to fruition, until I can finish it. And it usually happens pretty quick once there's a spark. And over a period of a couple of years, I just had all these songs that I thought were maybe the best I'd written for White Wizard yet. And so I just kind of inevitably, it inspired me to want to possibly keep it going. And then a lot of serendipity happened after that. James LaRue and I had already been back in touch and speaking for some time about doing something together again. And it just all kind of made sense. And once Wyatt was back in with both feet, it was full steam ahead.
Awesome. Again, the new record is Infernal Overdrive. Just some great stuff on this record. John, you know, in the past, we've heard Rush and Maiden influences in White Wizard's music, but I feel like bands like that even have more a prominent influence on this new record, even some progressive sounds at times. Do you feel that you're kind of maybe just reaching out a little more musically into different areas with this new record, Infernal Overdrive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always been the intent with White Wizard too. I think even though we started out being classified in the new wave of traditional heavy metal, I always wanted to have an attitude of a band like Rush that we weren't afraid to try new things and grow and expand. I have a very massive library of vinyl that crosses genres of all types. I listen to all types of music, and you know, metal is just actually a very small facet of what I listen to. So I think that my influences are pretty intense, you know, whether it's 60s psychedelic or you know, 70s prog, all the way to, you know, Motown, R&B, soul, jazz, blues, world music, alternative music. You know, I even love 80s pop. So there's just a vast array of influences all the time. It just depends on my mood. And so, yeah, I've always wanted White Wizard to have an eclectic sound, and I've always wanted White Wizard to continue to progress and get more interesting as we go. I think that's the best way that a band that's really all about the music can do it anyway. I think we're in it for the music first and foremost. And so we're trying to find the better us as musicians, as well as, fans, you know, cause I think we're fans first, and you'll always hear a little trickle of influence of our heroes in, because that's what we do. You know, we're fans first. I mean, we're making this music because we believe in it and we love it, and there's really no other reason we are. I don't think there'd be another White Wizard record if we weren't in this for the right reasons, you know, for the music. If we were in this for the party or for, you know, to get our egos stroked, I think we'd have jumped ship in 2010, you know.
Right on. Yeah. Hey, so this record, on previous records, you've done not only the bass playing and the songwriting, but you've also done quite a bit of guitar on a lot of the previous, I guess maybe all the previous White Wizard records. How much guitar are you playing on this record?
I play all the rhythm guitars. I have on the last three records exclusively. On Over the Top, I played all the rhythm guitars on 40 Deuces, the title track Over the Top, and on White Wizard, which is the song that closes that record. Those three songs were actually recorded when I just got together with Wyatt and we had a drummer. And that was it. And literally we went in the studio and tracked those songs. I played the lead on 40 Deuces, a couple of the simpler leads, and Over the Top, our producer played the middle lead, et cetera. So, but then once Flying Tigers came, I exclusively kind of took over rhythm guitar, and my producer really liked the way it felt. And we've just always stuck with that formula. And what's great about it is I'm able to say to LaRue, as I was on Devil's Cut with the last guys, don't worry about this. Whatever songs we're going to play live, I'll teach them to you later. Concentrate on writing killer leads. You know, that way they can focus 100% on just writing great leads as opposed to trying to learn all the material that just try to play it in the studio, which is kind of cumbersome, really, and pointless in the grand scheme. And it's been great because, you know, just like the last record, James J. LaRue just, you know, I mean, as you've heard, he just absolutely slayed the leads on this record. He just completely composed and wrote amazing lead work. So all the lead work is LaRue. All the rhythm work is me. I do some of the simpler harmony stuff, couple of the more complex harmonies he does, and we have a nice synergy that way, and it really ended up working out really well, and really stoked with the results because LaRue just destroyed it.
Cool. And now Will is back in the fold too. Will Warner.
Now Will is going to join us for our live gigs. Yeah, that'll be kind of officially released and pressed next week. But yeah, he's going to come play. Going to be our second guitar on our live gigs. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We're excited.
Cool. And as far as the topics go on this record, where do you draw influences from? I mean, there's been a few things I was listening to and I had to wonder if maybe the current political climate and just the place we are as a country now have influenced some of your lyrics.
Well, definitely the title track is almost more, it's not even so much of a political statement it's just that I kind of see the emerging of technology and stupidity in their finest hour, you know, and I just kind of see the human race as a whole just kind of circling the drain a bit with what I see around me. When I go to breakfast and I'll see a family of six sitting at breakfast and all of them are staring at their phones for an hour and they don't even converse, you know, you just kind of, laugh and scratch your head a bit. The obsession with things like the Kardashians, just the things that the human race seems to be obsessed with. And what's that saying, you know, that they say, never has a more, I forget how it states, I'm too tired, but never have more uninteresting people been more documented, you know. it's just a very interesting time to kind of look around. It's a bit of a sarcasm, the title track. There's some tribute to military on the album. There's a couple songs. One's about my grandfather's unit in World War II called Voyage of the Wolf Raiders, about the Marine Raiders. Yeah. There's Storm the Shores, which is a little bit more, you know, kind of a, just a general tribute to troops in general. I kind of feel like they get a bad rap in Western society. I don't think it's fair, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. There's songs, you know, about experiences I went through. Cocoon is about trying to find, some light in death when you lose somebody. Critical Mass, a little bit of a fun tongue-in-cheek shout out to critics that have kind of written us off over the years. Chasing Dragons is probably one of my favorite lyrically. It's kind of about, you know, it's using the metaphor of chasing the dragon of, you know, being a drug addict, how a lot of times love and relationships can be a lot like the same thing. And we're kind of chasing the dragon, so to speak, chasing that high, that initial high, and we never can get back, and all the chaos that and fallout that comes from it. That's kind of what that lyrical dynamic's about. So there's a lot of stuff. Some of it's very on the surface and easy to get. And fun, and some of it's a little bit deeper, and you know, it's just kind of just all ties into either things that were in my mind at the time when I was writing the songs that I felt conveyed the emotion or events I was going through at the time.
Right on. Now, I wanted to also ask you about the producer you worked with on this record. Can you fill us in on who that is?
Yeah, Ralph Patlin, who's pretty much, you know, been there from the beginning. I worked with Ralph on projects a long time ago when he was working with Michael Schenker and working with Megadeth and stuff and Dave. And all the Capitol remasters. He did a bunch of different stuff with different artists, and him and I worked on a couple projects, and I knew right away he had a special ear. I've worked with a lot of different people, and I always went, you know, from the moment him and I worked together, we had great chemistry. So when White Wizard was looking for someone to mix the first EP, when we'd recorded it and the guy that had mixed it wasn't doing a very good job, I hit up Ralph, and he mixed High Speed GTO EP as it sounds on an SSL board overnight for like $1,000 for us, you know, and that was it, you know. From there on, when Over the Top needed to be recorded, he was the clear choice, and we've kind of built a chemistry ever since. He's produced, he didn't produce the single I did a couple of years ago, that was just me, but all the records, he's been, you know, the producer on Over the Top, Flying Tigers, Devil's Cut, Overdrive. So this is our fourth record working together. We've built a great chemistry, and I've always said, if you watch all these documentary rock documentaries, whatever, all these bands that we all look up to, there always seems to be two guys. There's one that the band always seems to have found a producer that they worked with and built a chemistry with, they developed with. And luckily we've had that with Ralph. The other thing is they've always had a really great manager. That's something we've never had and that we continue to hope to get. I think that's been our Achilles heel. I think that all great bands, they seem to have had this manager at the beginning that had a vision, had some money, had investors, had the ability to corral all the egos. So, you know, we've got that with Ralph, at least, and that's part of what, you know, it's been constant, which has been great. And I think that's part of the reason this album, we all feel it's our best yet, because we all had a continuity and flow. We've all worked together enough. LaRue was seamless. He was great. I've worked with LaRue in the past. He's the best guitarist I've ever played with all due respect to other guitarists that have been in the group. LaRue's just a special talent. And he just is very easy to work with. Him and I communicate well. And it was really seamless. And it just, from the beginning to the end of the process, we all elevated it. It all just went really easy, which was great.
Very cool. I wanted to circle back to a song you mentioned, which I really dig, epic song, Voyage of the Wolf Raiders. Now, that song's about your grandfather, you said. Can you tell us a little bit about your grandfather and how he relates to this song?
Sure, yeah. It's, you know, the Pacific Fleet of World War II he was a part of, and he was a part of a very badass group called the Raiders and the Marines back then in World War II, and they were pretty much the first guys on the shore. You know, they were the, you know, seals of their day, so to speak, almost, you know what I mean? I mean, they were as badass as it came. A lot of them got killed, unfortunately. My grandpa was lucky to even come out of that, that war alive. And, you know, he just was a really awesome guy in my life. And, when I was back home a couple of years ago, my mom was busting out some of his old uniforms and I was putting them on and I was just getting real nostalgic. And, he had a book on his shelf about, you know, the Marine Raiders, and I started reading more, and I just absorbed it, and I felt like, you know, I think that their story would make a great, you know, song. And when I had the music for it, it just kind of made sense. I said, this just sounds like a very, it's very Maidenish, that song. It had a Maiden influence all over it when I wrote it. It just, sometimes that happens. I think I wrote that song mostly on the bass. That's why. Some songs I write on bass every now and then, that's one of them. And, I just kind of started writing the lyrics, and then I had the intro that I really liked. And it all just kind of came together, and, there you go.
Very cool. And it's a great record. Love that song. Love Storm the Shores. The first single was an ice pick in the forehead. Great stuff. So many great songs. The Illusion Tears, 11 minute, just again, epic. So much great stuff. Who's on drums, John, before? Because I think we covered all the members, the producer. I forgot the name of your drummer. Who's playing drums with you?
Yeah, well, our main drummer is a guy named Dylan Marks, D-Y-L-A-N Marks. He's kind of a newer kid. He's from San Diego. We did have another drummer on some tracks as well in the studio. But Dylan came on later and really wanted to be part of the band, which was big for us. And he did some of the most bombastic drums, and, you know, especially the first two songs, Infernal Overdrive and Storm the Shores. He just nailed them, and... So we adopted him as our permanent drummer because he really wanted to be a part of it. And our old drummer, Giovanni's over in Italy now, and just wasn't really, he's got a new life now. And We just felt like new blood was great. He made sense. He wanted to be a part of it, and we feel great about it. And we're excited to get out with him, man. He's got a lot of energy, and he's really professional and really hungry, which is great.
Excellent. Well, please keep me posted on any East Coast dates. We'd love to get White Wizard in New Jersey or New York City. Guys, the album is Infernal Overdrive, and this is a band that I know a lot of us have loved for a while. This record, I mean, right now I'm feeling like it's possibly my favorite White Wizard record. It's really good. Go and pick up a copy. Check it out. John, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day out there, and we will keep you posted when we're coming to the Northeast. And don't freeze your asses off out there.
Yeah, it's fucking cold right now.
Critical Mass by White Wizard. That's an epic song. It's like 9 minutes long. You can go buy the full version on iTunes. You got a little sound sample of it here on Talking Metal. Support White Wizard. Thank you, John, for joining us and always keeping us in the loop on what you're up to musically. Let's right now get into an interview. I mean, when you talk about rock managers, what do you get? Peter Grant, Colonel Parker, Brian Epstein. You know, the biggies, right? The big guys. Bill Coyne. This is one of those guys. This is Doug Goldstein, former manager of Guns N' Roses and many others. Let's check in with him right now and see how he's doing. Doug Goldstein, the iconic rock manager, known for his work with so many bands such as the great Guns N' Roses. Here we go. Doug Goldstein checking in with us on Talking Metal.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal podcast, and once again calling in. We haven't had him on the podcast for a while. Doug Goldstein, one of the greatest rock managers of all time. Doug, how are you, yeah, man?
If you don't believe, hey, Mark, if you don't believe I'm one of the greatest, just ask me.
Right, there you go. Hey, man, yeah. let's start with kind of an off the beaten path topic here. I just had the privilege of interviewing a guy who does doesn't do a lot of interviews, and he spent an hour with me on the phone. His name is Eric Singer.
Wow.
just a fantastic drummer. And he brought up you during the interview. He said, he told me about getting into Alice Cooper's band. You know, he was having a real hard time. He had been fired from Badlands. And he mentions that he just started calling people, trying to put the word out that he needed a job. He literally needed a job.
Right.
And he cites you as the guy who really took up the cause for him and started putting the word out. And the next thing he knew, Alice Cooper, because of you,
how did you hit me with that one, Striggle? You're killing me, buddy.
Do you remember this, though? Do you remember getting him the gig at Alice Cooper's band?
I remember it. Are you kidding me? You tell Eric Singer, the watch collector, that I need money and I have a one-of-one rose gold with diamonds, but it's not gaudy, right?
Right, okay.
Beautiful. It's one of one in the world. It's called Novakian. You can't find it unless you go to, like, Switzerland, right?
Wow.
I think they have an office. They used to have one in Beverly Hills, but back when I had money, Mark, which I don't anymore, but it's okay. That's another story. That's what marriage does to you. It's one of one in the world, $175,000 watch. I'd rather give that money to people that need it. It's kind of my new spin, as you and I talked about off air.
Right.
You know, I would use the money to, you know, put gas in my car. That's it. The rest of it goes to charity. But Eric and I, we got to be really good friends. Very early in life, I was a bodyguard, director of security, right, as it were. And so I had met Eric, and I just fell in love with the guy. He's affable. He's really incredibly intelligent. And, you know, we had a shared intelligence, his. He's just a good guy.
So
when he called me, I'm like, you know, I have what I call the cerebral Rolodex. So when somebody kind of tells me what they're going through, I do this interesting plug and play. And so I thought, hey, I know, hang on a second. And so, yeah, I called Coop and the rest is history.
Wow.
And who knew he'd end up, you know, being the drummer of Kiss. I mean, God bless him.
Yeah, absolutely. He deserves it.
I mean,
it.
Hey, anybody can last that long with Gene and Paul, they're okay in my life. In all fairness, I can't say that because Gene and Paul have been amazing to this little friend of mine in San Diego who has cerebral palsy.
Oh, really?
And for 25 years, every single time they're in San Diego, they make sure he gets a pass to come backstage, and they give him a big hug, and they take pictures with him. I mean, I got all the time in the world for those guys. You know?
Wow, that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
So you met Eric back when he was in Sabbath, right? You were doing security for them?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It was the Seven Star record. Glenn Hughes was the singer for half of it. And then Ray Gillen took over. And I used to have to, you know, protect Tony Iommi, although he didn't need much protection. He's a badass, right?
Right.
He used to beat up Ozzy in high school when he was John Osborne.
I've heard that story.
He's a big boxer. And I'll tell you, when we're not focusing on, when we're doing something else, if you're not already aware of this, the great story about Tony cutting off his fingertips and writing a letter to Django Reinhardt and just addressing it Django Reinhardt India. And he got a letter back like 3 months later.
Right.
With a prosthetic doctor in London. Without that happening, there is no Black Sabbath.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. Cool.
Yeah. So Django Reinhardt, for those that are listening that don't know, was this incredible gypsy guitarist who traveled the world with three fingers.
Right.
And some of them were cut off, right?
Yeah, and that inspiration.
So, anyway, Mark, go on.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, anyways, you have such a history.
Obviously, that's what turned into Badlands because Gillen and Eric were in Sabbath.
Right, yep. And you have such a great history, and we want to definitely talk to you a little more about your history and get your thoughts on, of course, Guns N' Roses, the band that you brought to such super big heights, and we'll talk about that later. But right now, let's talk about what you're up to now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you have a lot of I guess I would call it charity type plans in the works here. Yeah. What can you fill us in on as far as that goes?
Well, you know, Mark, I mean, it's interesting. I was presented with a lot of money at a very early age, squandered through it, and I kind of just started figuring it out. I wasn't doing philanthropic stuff. I mean, I took care of family and friends, don't get me wrong, but homeless issues, didn't take care of that. The drug issues, didn't take care of that. Battered women, pediatric cancer, on and on and on, right? There's so many people. You know, I'm in here in Dallas right now. I'm on my way to Austin. And while I'm here, I went out to a place called Cafe Brazil. It's on my Facebook. You can check it out. But on my other page, Mark, you know which one it is. But,
right.
But I went there, and there's these students from Texas A&M, little Aggie kids. Totally cute. So I sit down at the table, and I said, look, guys, I got to tell you something. I humbly apologize. Well, for what? I said, the state of the world that we're handing it off to you kids. You know, for the EPA director to say, oh, gee, the global warming doesn't exist. What are you talking about?
Right.
So, yeah, tell the polar bears that are sitting up on, you know, one little block of ice that doesn't exist, right? So, I mean, I just can't ignore it anymore. So I'm starting with this as an anti-opioid awareness festival. It's literally in the formative stages. But I've given the festival idea the ambiguous name of SLAM, Saving Lives in America. And the primary reason for that is, you know, yeah, this one's going to be anti-opioid awareness. But last night I was on the phone with a guy named Josh, who runs executive protection, cyber protection, and is part of the VA admin for Trump. And so I want to do a veterans deal in D.C., a concert there. And I'm only going after bands that it resonates for them, and I'm not asking them to do it for free. We've got backers. We'll find sponsors. And so all I would ask is search your heart and come up with a realistic price, right? Just a realistic price.
Right.
And to that end, you know, if it resonates for them, great. I mean, look, I'm looking at the Eminem and U2 records that have dropped without fanfare, right?
Yeah.
Totally. And I'm thinking, what a great way to launch this, to do something good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even Gene Simmons. I mean, I spoke to his manager, who I'll leave nameless, but he's an old buddy of mine. And I called him Christmas Eve. And I said, hey, bud, I said, I'm starting this thing. What about Gene being the spokesperson? Well, no, he's got some issues in the public, which I want to address, which everybody knows about. And I said, yeah, but look, I'm not his manager. You are. What a better way to get out from under that than to do something good in America. Let's go on Sharon Osbourne's show. The talk, you know, let's go on the Dr. Phil. And so now you get out from under that. And he says, well, I'm sorry, I don't think it resonates. It doesn't work for him.
Right.
Again, you manage him, I don't. You know, God bless you. Because my dad taught me when I was a kid, SW, SW, SW. Some will, some won't, so what? Right? It's like, if somebody says no to me, Mark, I don't have time to focus on it. I got to move on.
Right on.
I mean, this thing is so time consumptive, Mark, that I've literally, because I'm doing it solo right now, and I'm not making a penny at this point. And I don't care. I'll eat grub worms. It doesn't matter. If I can save lives, screw it. I don't care. So in the past 3 weeks, I've been in the emergency room 3 times from severe exhaustion and dehydration. Yeah. And I'm drinking the hell out of water.
Right.
But I mean, you know, Mark, about me. I mean, I was talking to a buddy of mine today. My IQ is a certain level, right? And I won't say it because it's just irrelevant, and I don't like to throw that out there. It's not a braggadocio thing. It's just how my head spins, and it's the reason why I don't sleep. So I'm talking to a friend of mine as a partner today named Andrew Primer, great guy. And Andrew says, people think that you're on drugs. What? No. How can you be a bodyguard on drugs?
Right.
But I operate really fast. I talk really fast because of the level of my IQ. So I tell him the number because he's my friend and partner. He goes, oh, shit, I thought yours was like as high as Einstein. So while we're talking, he's on speakerphone. I Google it. Einstein's IQ was actually 18 points lower than mine.
Oh, wow.
It's like, you know, so I'm blessed with what I call the cerebral Rolodex.
Right.
As I talk to somebody, like there's this great little Christian kid named Brady Alamazola, lives in Texas and Houston. He's a professional tennis coach, but he also is like one of the best Christian men I've ever met. So he's introducing me to this group of Christian guys, which is how I met Trump's guy. And he knows kind of, I've never talked to him about the whole intellect thing, but he gets it. you know, he stays out of my way and just kind of, he's the connector. He introduces me to people and we kind of roll them out one at a time. You know, like there's this great gal that, and all these things are appearing kind of out of my Rolodex. I get this message called, I mean, a mental message. I think it's God. You can call it whatever you want, right? But like I'm driving to Dallas. Right. Hey, I haven't talked to Sahar, my buddy who I met at the Beverly Wilshire. She sold me that watch that Eric Singer's going to buy so I can put money into other people's pockets. Right? So she sold me that watch. Now she owns one of the most successful jewelry stores in Beverly Hills. And you can't get in unless you have an appointment because of security, guns, the whole deal, right? She designs all of the jewelry for Cartier and Tiffany, and then they jack it up by 5 to 10 times because it's got their name on it. So she said, hey, Doug, how can I help? Do you want money? I said, I don't think that's it. She goes, how about we do a benefit in Beverly Hills? Hey, now you're talking.
Right.
So I'm going to talk to Sahar, and we're going to put that on so we can raise awareness and raise money.
So you're looking. You mentioned the Slam Festival. So that's
yeah,
one
saving lives in America.
Okay, saving lives in America. Now, so that's one potential element of this, but this is just an overall awareness campaign about opiates and other things.
But it's not even awareness. Mark, to be more definitive, it's not awareness. My financial background, let's say, a guy named Mike Zipric, great guy, out of Arizona. He's already built one $23 million facility in Tucson. It's a rehab facility. We want to raise money. It's not awareness. It's raising money to put people in there that can't afford it. They're like scholarships. And the cool thing about Mike, he gets it. It wasn't my idea. It was his idea. But it resonates for me. Heroin addicts, they're already on the bottom of the chain. They're already in the street, right? Not literally, but so the AA thing is a little antiquated when it comes to the heroin addiction. You're going to wake these kids up at 5:30 in the morning, kick them out of bed and make them make their own bed and then go cook their own meals. No, not how Mike rolls. Mike's like, get up at 7 or 8. When you come back, your bed's going to be made. Your breakfast is already made for you. And this is the part I love, Mark. It's a music-based therapy program.
Cool.
How cool is that? So this guy's got his head in the right place. He puts his money where his mouth is. He made his money in real estate development in Arizona. But he's going to build 4 more of these facilities around the country. He's a good guy with his head in the right place, his heart's in the right place.
Nice.
I just feel blessed to have him walk into my life.
Cool. And so as far as the actual Slam Festival goes, is there a time frame you're looking at? And are you,
I'm working with a guy. He was my boss. When I was 18, I was going to college in Flagstaff, Arizona. And I used to drive down to Phoenix and work every single concert down there. Every single concert, right?
As security?
I don't care who it is. It could be this. Yeah. Stop it. That's my favorite band of all time.
Right.
I used to double date back way before I was married. I dated this girl named Vicky Batkin. She worked at CBS Records. And Neil Sean was dating her best friend who worked at CBS Records. So Neil and I used to double date for about a year and a half.
Wow.
And some of the greatest as a kid, when I'm 16 years old at the Rose Bowl, working a Journey show. And I'm looking at this amazing production that their manager, Hurry Herbert, who's a genius, came up with. It was the best live presentation, them and Queen, right? But Queen really didn't have the same receptivity in America that Journey did. The rest of the world, forget about it. I mean, Queen was way bigger than Journey, with the exception of Japan, right? But, I mean, I know a lot about the history of music because I study it. I grew up on it. At a wonderfully sensitive, caring, loving guitar playing brother who Axel, I came into his room in London. He plays me a tape and I'm like, wow, that guitar player is fantastic. He goes, you don't know who it is. I said, no, that's your brother, you dumbass. So, I mean, it was nice to hear that acknowledgement, but
right.
So I understand a lot about music in all genres. I don't care if it's country, the classical, the whatever. So my whole deal, Mark, is using my experiences from the time I was 14 years old up until today to try and help others through all walks of life. So to turn it full circle to your question, this buddy of mine that I worked with for, actually, Danny Zalisco, for some reason, Live Nation bounced him and took his second guy, Terry Burke, and gave him the Live Nation job. Danny now does about 1,000 shows a year. He's best friends with Alice Cooper. I mean, best friends, right? He's his other best friend is Alice's manager, Shep Gordon. So, right. Okay. I mean, he was at a dinner last week in Maui with Shep and Alice and Oprah Winfrey and Michael McDonald and Kenny Chesney. You know, so although we haven't yet gotten talent, because you have to get the buildings first and you have to have a mission statement, and it's literally in the infancy stages, we're looking at October, November, depending upon availability in the area, right? What venues are going to be available when? I mean, I want to bring in national, if not international, television. But that's going to be dependent upon what artists decide to jump on or not.
Right. Okay.
So if it resonates for them, fantastic. If it doesn't, SW. Right.
Right. Okay.
So Danny will promote the event, and I'll produce and organize.
Awesome. Cool. Well, it sounds like a really potentially very exciting event. Please keep us posted as it starts to materialize and come about. We want the exclusive.
Mark, you're not going to get the exclusive, you piece of crap. But you and my buddy Mitchie LaFon out of Canada.
Yes.
I want you guys to come out, obviously, be my host, be my guest, and set up and do a remote from there.
Absolutely.
It looks like it's going to be 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But again, Mark, it's contingent upon who comes on the bill.
Okay. Cool.
You know, hopefully, how many listeners you got right now, Mark? When do you put this up?
Well, you know, we consistently get about 5,000 to 6,000 an episode, which is
you good. Know what? Yeah. So here's what you do, okay? Put it up on a website, put it up on Facebook, and say if you like it, share. If you like it, share.
Right on.
Okay, let's get it out to as many people as we can.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Let's let you take care of those little boys who are sitting in that freezing New York.
Right.
Let's get your heating bills taken care of.
Yeah. No, that'd be nice. We definitely.
Yeah, but
definitely have some. Hey, big Mark, ones this I got
Mark, I just got to tell you that I feel honored and blessed to have you in my life. You've always been great to me. Yeah, I love you. You're a really good guy. You do things for the right reason. It's not monetary. You love music.
Well, thanks.
And God bless you for that, buddy. And I'll be here for you anytime.
Well, thanks, Doug. And the same to you, man. We're always glad to talk with you and hear what you're up to.
Thanks, buddy.
And please keep us posted on everything. Oh, go ahead.
I will. Yeah, I was just going to say in closing, I told you this off air, but the goal for me is to go to Harvard Divinity School, like seminary, to understand world religion, and that'll be 2019 spring in Boston.
Nice.
And the premise there is, I started reading sociopsychology when I was 7 years old. Why are you who you are today based upon what you grew up with, right? And so how can I really talk to somebody who's Islamic or Hindu or Buddhist or whatever if I don't understand kind of their upbringing? I just think it'll help me get inside of their heads a little better to be able to be more empathetic.
Absolutely.
And whatever God wants to happen, Mark's going to happen. Dude. Right. I don't know what it is, but I'm not questioning it right now. Just kind of following God's lead.
Right, right. Well, you've had an amazing ride so far, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be amazing.
But I didn't do the right things, Mark. It's going to be way more amazing now that I'm putting things in the right position.
Good, good.
So, God willing, right? God willing.
Right on. So, I wanted to just, before we let you go, I just needed to at least hear a brief comment on, you know, the band that you helped bring to such such success, mm-hmm. Guns N' Roses.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
we've seen materialize over the last year and a half at this point is mm-hmm. truly spectacular. And just from a financial point, I saw the tour three times, thought they sounded amazing, and really enjoyed mm-hmm. it. As someone who was so tight with that whole thing mm-hmm. back in the '80s and late '80s and early '90s when that mm-hmm. happened. How is mm-hmm. that? Is it painful for you to hear how successful they're doing without your involvement? Are you happy? What's your overall take on it?
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. I mean, I love those guys. I love them with all my heart and soul. They were my family, right? We grew up together. It was like the Partridge Family. We didn't realize how big we were until we got home. People said, "Hey, you're the number one band in the world." What?
Right.
When did that happen? Right? I know we have a plane. But but no, I mean, the reality, it's just a reality. is that thing could have been, yeah, I understand it's huge, successful. It could have been way bigger if I would have been involved. And I would have done it for free. I don't care. I'm at that point. I don't care. They don't want my involvement, and I'll discuss that with you in a second. But when they originally discussed the announcement, right? Get them back together. And it was like Blues Brothers. Put the band back together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There was a one paragraph announcement that went out. Now, in my world, I would have hang-glided naked over Giant Stadium with a flare in my ass saying, we're back.
Right, right.
DNR management says we're back. And maybe, just maybe, Slash and Duff would have joined me. Right? Yeah. Maybe. Who knows?
Right.
But, I mean, it was just, it went without fanfare. In every city that they play in, nobody's even aware they're playing. You know? And the thing I'm most proud of, Mark, in the 2.5 year Use Your Illusion tour, I defy you to find one empty seat.
Right.
Underplay. Because I wasn't interested in maximizing the dollars to milk it out of that one. I'm worried about the next tour. If you can't get a ticket, you're going to be first in line on the next tour. You know, why are they having such international success? Gee, I don't know. Yeah, they wrote the music. But the fact that my degree is in international marketing, while everybody else is sleeping, I'm writing up marketing reports or talking to people in Tel Aviv, Australia, South America. So they're not even aware of some of the things that I did for them financially, improving their label deal from a 15% royalty because Niven, whatever, whatever. I mean, it's irrelevant. He did some things that were a little unscrupulous, but I had to renegotiate with David Geffen. It actually turned ugly. I won't go into it, but suffice to say, after a number of months, Eddie Rosenblatt, who's a wonderful, sweet man, president, and David Berman, who's one of my favorite people on the planet, head of business affairs, they allowed me the opportunity to improve that deal to 34 points, more than doubling the royalty. At the time, it was the highest royalty in the history of music. They were 4 points higher than Michael Jackson.
Oh my
Metallica
God, wow.
has a better deal now because they use this. In California, they have something called the 7-year statute for any written contract, even marriage. After 7 years, that becomes null and void. So they contested the 7-year statute and they ended up getting a 50-50 deal. But at the time, you know, they got that deal. And oddly enough, the only person who recognized it and thanked me was Izzy Stradlin, who was out of the band.
Wow.
He'd get these massive royalty checks and call me and go, dude, thanks. I can buy more motorcycles now.
Wow. So
that's cool.
So just to circle back a little bit.
Mark,
okay. Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I want to finish on one point. The band is under a misconception, huge misconception. The biggest date in the history of the band is July 5, 1993. And I'll tell you what they think, and then I'll tell you reality. They've been told by Niven, right? I'm over in Hawaii being a dad, thinking that I'm going up on the Mount Rushmore of rock managers with Peter Grant, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm losing weight so the sculpture looks good on the Mount Rushmore, right? And so my legacy, of course, is, oh, yeah, Guns N' Roses manager, Jelly's great, thanks. So while I don't know it, Niven circles back with Slash and Duff and convinces him of the following. On July 5, 1993, the band's in Barcelona, Spain. And Axel tells me, come to my room. And so I go to his room. And again, this is what they still believe.
Yeah.
I come to his room and Axel says, Doug, I had the name Guns N' Roses in the beginning. So today, before the concert, you're going to have Slash and Duff sign a contract, giving me back the name. And if they don't, I'm not going on. And we're no longer in St. Louis. This is Barcelona, Spain. There's going to be riots, and those deaths are going to be on those guys' heads. So I then peel off and talk to Lori Soriano, the band's attorney, and she drafts a document. I go to soundcheck, present it. Those guys sign it in an inebriated state, and the rest is history. Okay? The reality is July 5, 1993 is the day that my son, Jacob Samuel Goldstein, was born in Mission Viejo, California. I wasn't even on the same continent, and my wife was in labor for 3 days. I wasn't communicating with anybody. It was John Reese, who ends up to be Judas in my life.
Yeah.
John Reese presented it. I had nothing to do with it.
Right.
I didn't even know it existed. And more importantly, I'm not a dumb guy, Mark. You can't, in that position, if you present that contract, it's under duress. Wipe your butt with that contract. It's not null and void.
Hmm. Yeah.
And they're inebriated. They're not confident to sign the contract.
Right.
So when they sued each other to fight over the name, I was mesmerized that I wasn't brought into court. to say, hey, did this happen? I would have said, guys, look, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
The only way that if in fact that was what was going to happen, I would have, if Axel would have asked me that, I would have said, dude, you can't do it under duress. Wait for a week break. And more importantly, they didn't even have legal representation.
Yeah.
They just signed it.
Hmm.
It's ludicrous that they would operate under the assumption that that's reality, particularly now that they're sober.
Right. Right.
But they won't listen to me. Maybe somebody who's listening to this will go, hey guys, just take a look at it. Because you know what, Mark? I mean, they're one of the reasons why I'm doing this, right? I had to carry a Narcan on the road and used it on Slash. Hmm. The same drug, it's the same thing that they did on Uma Thurman on Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
You know, watching somebody that you love almost die, it crushes you.
Yeah.
And obviously I lost Shannon Hoon from Blind Melon at that famous rock and roll age of 27, Mark.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
In New Orleans, he dies alone in a bunk, leaving a 2-year-old girl, Nico, behind.
Oh, my God. Tragic.
I mean, I got to do this. I got to do this, Mark. I just can't. I mean, all the signs are there.
This all ties into the Slam Festival that you're planning. And yeah,
that's right.
It seems like a great cause, and I wish you the best of luck on that. I did want to just circle around with the you know, reunion of Duff, Axel, and Slash.
Mm-hmm.
Were you implying that, because the tour was immensely successful these past year and a half, 2 years, were you implying that it could have even been
in
more?
In America?
Yeah, in America.
Way more. Where's the television coverage?
Yeah, but so but financially, it did rank as the highest, you know, tour of the last year, and
that's great. And I guarantee it with all the ancillary. I guarantee it.
It could have been bigger. Income, is what you're saying. It could have been bigger.
I could have increased it by 5 times. No question.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I did for him. I mean, that's what I did for him when I was their manager.
Right. Right. So, yeah, because there was a lack of press about it. But I thought that was kind of like, you know, Axel doesn't like doing interviews, and it seems like
he didn't like doing interviews in the beginning.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Look, in 87 and a half, he's no showing on a bunch of interviews. So I talked to Lori Earle, the publicist, who ended up as the publicist for Jimmy Iovine. And Eminem and Snoop and Dre, right? She didn't do bad. Oh, and you too.
Right.
She did okay with her career. She's retired now. But sweet little girl, but she's a little Jack Russell Terrier. So I tell Lori, I say, hey, Lori, look, stop sending me Axel interviews. Let's pull those. She goes, why? They all want to talk to him. Exactly.
Yeah.
Create supply and demand. It's just the laws of supply and demand. Pull away the supply, and everybody in the world wants him. So he got to pick and choose the interviews that he did. Do I want to talk to Kurt Loder? You know, do I want to rub up against Jan Wehner at Rolling Stone? He got to pick and choose. And Slash and Duff and occasionally Izzy would jump in and do interviews,
right?
Particularly Slash and Duff. See, that's another misnomer. People think that Axel ran that band. No, I mean, leave Axel alone. Let him be creative. Slash, he'd pass out a chandelier 4 a.m. He'd be banging at my door at 9 or 10. Hey, what are we going to do today?
Right.
They'd sit in my room and we'd roll it out together. That guy's a genius, and he also did every T-shirt design the band's ever put out.
Wow. Wow. Interesting.
It hurts my heart. I reached out to Duff recently on Facebook Messenger.
Did you?
Kind of told him what I'm up to, and I haven't heard back. You know,
right.
Again, SW. I think it would be great. I don't want to manage him. That's not my premise. That's not my impetus. You know, I don't know whether they'll ever tour again, but the reality is, you know, that's not my goal.
Right.
You know, if they want to come play on the show, I'd love to have them. If they want to play on the veteran thing, I'd love to have them. If they want to do something for pediatric cancer, I'd love to have them. And I'm not asking for a discount, like I said.
Right.
Whatever your going rate is, come on. Have the exposure. International television. You haven't had any international television yet.
Yeah.
So why not close the door with something fantastic like that?
Yeah, well, Your work speaks for itself in the past, and we're definitely looking forward to your work in the future. It sounds like this is just a great cause. Again, we're talking about the Slam Festival with Doug Goldstein, former manager of Guns N' Roses, former tour manager of... Now, you did tour managing, too, with Great White. Were you working with them? Did you do tour?
Yeah, I worked with Great White. I lived with Jack Russell, sweet man. Michael Lardy, Adi Desbro, Mark Kendall, one of the funniest people. You have time for a quick Mark Kendall story?
Absolutely.
Okay. He's the funniest guy I've ever met, right? We're walking through customs. I'm behind him. And the customs agent, he's Japanese, right?
Right.
The customs, we're landing in Japan. And the customs agent is going through his stuff. And he says, "You like marijuana?" He goes, "Yeah, I love them." He goes, "Really? You like marijuana?" "Yeah, love. Yeah, absolutely, love."
Right.
I go, Mark, what do you think he's asking you? He's asking if I like Muddy Waters. No, Mark, he's asking if you love marijuana.
Right.
No, Mark gets good. Pulled into secondary and stripped down.
Right. Oh, man.
I miss those guys. I love those guys. Yeah.
Great stuff.
I love those guys.
Do you ever
hey, Mark, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you, I mean, do you have a private email that you can ask people if they want to respond to? And then, you know my email, right?
Yeah.
You can just forward me the ones that you think are prudent that I need to respond to.
As far as just people interested in the Slam Festival or...
Yeah, or if they know any bands that are big enough to sell tickets that would actually mean something for this cause. Or whatever offering. I'm not looking for money necessarily.
Right.
You know, that'll be in time. Once I establish the 501(c), the nonprofit. But my goal is to be in Walmart. You know, when you check out a Walmart and you can give $1, $5, or $10
definitely.
To a cause.
Right.
That's what I want. You know, cool. I want you to walk into McDonald's and there'd be a box, right? And the name of the production company, by the way, is Hand of God International Productions LLC.
Excellent. Cool.
And the good news is, Mark, I'm really not crazy. People just think so.
All right. So anything I can do to help, Doug, absolutely. And let's keep talking about this. And please keep me posted on any updates. We want to hear what's happening.
Mark.
All right, man. Well, you be safe. I know you've had some health stuff happening recently. So we wish you all the best and want your health to be 100%.
I'm pulling out of here, Mark, on the 13th and going to my healthy space, Hawaii.
Okay.
To pray and stretch and do my martial arts and
good.
Get my head right, go up to the top of Mauna Kea and we'll watch the sunrise and go down to Ken's House of Pancakes in Hilo, eat there, you know, whatever. There's a great spot, by the way. King Kamehameha is the man in Hawaii. He's the king, right?
Right.
And he raised his family in an area called Waipio Valley, which is where the famous UFC guy, E.J. Penn, grew up. And you go down there, and there's the ocean on one side and about a 2,000-foot waterfall on the other side.
Wow, beautiful.
And you just go hike.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. And so that's where I go get my head right.
All right. Very good. It sounds like a beautiful spot.
Hi, buddy.
Doug, take care of yourself. Yeah. Stay healthy.
Thanks, Mark. Stay in touch, reach out anytime.
Yeah, reach out anytime.
You too, bud. 24/7. My phone's on.
You got it, man. All right. Great catching
thanks,
up with
Mark.
You.
Thanks, Mark. God bless, buddy. I love you.
Doug, thanks so much for joining us here on Talking Metal. Always great to hear your stories and hear what you're up to. We want you to be healthy, safe, and I know there's been, you know, ups and downs in your life and some medical stuff that you've had to deal with. So, listen, I'm always thinking about you, man, and reach out anytime. My apologies. It took so long to post this interview. Like I mentioned earlier, I've been out of work, so I'm interviewing everybody. People are like, can you do an interview tomorrow at 1 o'clock? Yeah, sure. And when I'm working full time, usually I can't do that. So I don't get this backlog of interviews like I currently have, but I'm completely, totally backed up and I'm just feeling bad because big name people are reaching out to me and going, hey, what the hell's going on with my interview that you recorded over a month ago? And I'm like stressing. So I'm going to try to get you some extra episodes here. Maybe simple episodes where I don't talk too much and we just get the guests on. So stay tuned for some great stuff coming up. Yeah. All right. On that note, please also check out my show on YouTube. It's called The Mark and Mitch Show. It's a weekly YouTube show. And I don't know. Whenever we talk about KISS, it seems to get more views, which is good, but also bums me out because I feel like some of the other episodes have been really good and not as many people watch those. I don't know if that's because Mitch has his association, you know, from 3-4 years back with the Three Sides of the Coin show and people like to hear him talk about KISS, but the dude knows a lot about other bands and topics. So please check out all our shows. We're up to like 12 episodes now on YouTube. The Mark and Mitch Show, available on the Talking Metal YouTube page, youtube.com/talkingmetal. Also available in the video section on talkingrock.net, which is my new website. Let me know what you think of it. Talkingrock.net. Okay, on that note, we're going to get out of here. Oh, you know what I said I was going to do before we do that? I said I was going to read a review from iTunes. So if you go into your iTunes browser and you search Talking Metal, which is what I'm doing right now, you will find the Talking Metal podcast, as well as my other podcast, Talking Rock, and what else? Talking Rock and Metal Raps. And then there's a ratings and review section. And I'm going to read you, wow, the reviews go all the way back to 2006. Craziness. I'm going to read you the most recent one. And we could really use a new one. It's been a while since we've had a review on iTunes. This is by J98. I've been listening since episode 35 or so, and I love this show. You'll appreciate the wealth of classic metal knowledge, but don't let that fool you. These guys are on top of all the new metal, too. The only distraction for me is the Kiss thing. I don't know if it's because I'm from the West Coast, but I don't get the fascination with Kiss. But I won't hold that against them. If you want to learn what's hot in the metal community, this is the place. And it's funny. Check out the episodes where they stalk the Guns N' Roses offices. Classic. The other metal shows wish they were half as good and had half as many interviews. Up the irons. Cool. Thanks, Jay. Yeah, well, we do talk about Kiss a lot. And wow, those Guns N' Roses things you're talking about, those are way, 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 way. Those are like 11 years ago. So maybe not 11, 10 years ago. So no, yeah, man, I'm thinking Chinese Democracy came out 10 years ago already, right? Wow. So those are like 11, 12 years ago. We've had a lot of good content since then, Jay, but thanks for remembering those. We are up to, what is this, 728, 29? I don't even know where we are episode-wise, but there's been a lot of episodes, a lot of good stuff. The show has evolved since those days, but we still try to have fun, and sometimes we're funny, whether we mean it or not, right? Thanks, Jay, for the review. And please leave us a review on iTunes. Maybe I'll read it here on the podcast. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. All right, guys, take care, and let's have a song take us out here. What do I got? This is the song Split, recorded by the late, great CC Banana, who we lost a number of years ago. I miss this guy so much. He was our first guest on Talking Metal back on episode 1, joined us many times through the years, and sadly left us a number of years back. We miss him very much. Split by CC Banana, and if it sounds familiar, yeah, because it is kind of a Kiss song. Features David Z, who we also sadly lost a number of years back, or not a number of years, recently, right? Less than a year ago. Actually, months ago, right? Adrenaline Mob. David Z played with Z-Rock, was the star of an IFC show. Yeah, he's on this song too. Split, featuring two former Talking Metal guests and friends, and sadly we've lost them both. But this is a funny song. Check it out. Spit by CC Banana and David Z. Also features Angus Clark on this song.
Got no manners and I'm not too clean, but I know what I like if you know what I mean. What'll people say? Oh, Mr. Can't you see? It don't mean split to me. Lord above, what a lot of woman with a lot of love. Well, thin is in, but it's plain to see. It don't mean split to me.
I got big hips, sweet lips. Make a man of you. The bigger the cushion.
see, it don't mean split to me.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.